You're listening to the Life in Deep Ellum podcast, exploring the sacred in art, faith, and community. Thanks for being here.
Hey guys. One of my favorite depictions of the nativity scene comes from the movie Simon Birch. It's this typical Christmas pageant with kids all dressed up as shepherds and wise men. There's Mary and Joseph, and little Simon Birch plays baby Jesus because he's the only one small enough to fit in the manger. Everything is going fine, and then all hell breaks loose. Like, Simon grabs Mary, she falls into the manger, the shepherds and the wise men start to fight each other. The kid playing the angel is hoisted above everyone while Miss Levy holds the rope, and a pulley breaks, and he starts swinging wildly out of control.
Don't feel so good.
If you vomit on this stage, I swear I will leave you up there till next Christmas.
It's a hilarious scene. It's amazing. And it begs the question, where on earth did we get this elaborate tradition of the nativity scene? Where'd this come from? Well, allow me a few moments to break it down for you. First, the word nativity comes from the Latin nativus. It simply means arisen by birth, or the occasion of a person's birth. It's where we get the word native. Like, I'm not a native Texan. I wasn't born here. I come from a richer land in the north, Oklahoma. Anywho, over time, the word nativity has come to be primarily applied to the occasion of Christ's birth. Second, we can reliably point back to St. Francis of Assisi for the first live nativity scene. It was the early 1200s, and St. Francis had this idea to recreate Christmas Day. We know about this because St. Bonaventure was a friend of St. Francis, and he wrote a biography about him. And in it, he quotes St. Francis, who said, "I want to do something that will recall the memory of that child who was born in Bethlehem, to see with bodily eyes the inconveniences of his infancy, how he lay in the manger, and how the ox and the ass stood by." So that's what he did. With the Pope's blessing, he set up a special service in a cave. There was a manger with hay and a doll that played the baby Jesus kind of laying there in the manger. And there were many who claimed during the service they could miraculously hear this doll crying. I guess this was before the song Away in the Manger, which says, "No crying he makes." Also, we're told that the villagers claimed that the hay in the manger had the ability to heal sick animals. Healing hay. And lastly, St. Francis recruited an ox and an ass to stand by the manger. Now, why an ox and an ass? Now, there's no reference to an ox and an ass in the New Testament Gospels. Well, it seems to go back to a passage from the prophet Isaiah, quote-unquote, "The ox knows his owner and the ass his master's crib." Then there was the Gospel of Pseudo-Matthew. Yes, I said Pseudo-Matthew. Did you guys know about that book? Listen, there were all kinds of apocryphal books written about Jesus in the first centuries and later centuries. Unless you study the Bible academically, you will likely never be exposed to the Gospel of Thomas or the Protoevangelium of James. But that doesn't mean the early church weren't reading these things. Just because we don't, they definitely were reading them. And in the 7th century, so much later, there was supposedly another gospel written by Matthew, Pseudo-Matthew. And in it, it said this, "And on the third day after the birth of our Lord Jesus Christ, Mary went out of the cave, and entering a stable, placed the child in a manger, and an ox and an ass adored him. Then was fulfilled that which was said by the prophet Isaiah, 'The ox knows his owner, and the ass his master's crib.'" Fascinating, huh? So wait, was Jesus born in a stable or a cave? I mean, if we read the New Testament, we only have two accounts of Jesus' birth. One is found in Matthew, the other is in Luke. And they both tell the same story from different perspectives. Now, Matthew is writing to a Jewish audience, so he focuses on, like, the male perspective of lineage. He focuses on Joseph and validates Jesus' birth with the arrival of the Magi, royalty. Luke, a Gentile, is writing to a marginalized Gentile audience. So he focuses on the marginalized of society. He focuses on Mary, a woman, and he validates Jesus' birth with the angel's message being given to lowly shepherds. But nowhere does it mention a stable or a cave. Matthew wrote, "And Joseph gave him the name Jesus. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, Magi from the east came to Bethlehem." So Matthew just skates right by Jesus' day of birth. Luke, on the other hand, tells us about Mary and Joseph traveling to Bethlehem. But all he says is, while they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn a son. Mary wrapped him in clothes and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. So no stable, no cave, no ox or donkey. And notice, in neither rendition do we find the shepherds and the Magi together at the same time. In fact, it's likely that Jesus was almost a toddler by the time the Magi found their way to him. The only part of the nativity scene that seems to be directly authenticated by the original Gospels are the swaddled baby and the manger. Other than that, it's all a jumbled cocktail of some accurate details, some conjectures, and some outright mistakes. You see, the Magi and the shepherds never met. So, what do we do with all of this? Thanks to St. Francis's idea, the nativity scene took off. Within a century, the practice had exploded across Italy, eventually Europe. They started using figurines and statues, and nowadays, we see the nativity scene painted and plastered everywhere. So, does that mean the commercialization of this holy scene makes it invalid? It's a good question. But I would have another question in response. What does the nativity scene do for you? How does it make you feel? Does it resonate with you? Does it open your heart to Christ's birth? For St. Francis, he wanted to highlight the humbleness and the inconveniences of Jesus' native setting, born in poverty and obscurity. That's powerful, if you ask me. But my guess is that many of us are a bit numb to the nativity scene. Precisely because it's so commercialized, we stop thinking about what it all means. You know, liturgies do that sometimes. We get so used to singing the same songs or engaging the same prayers that they no longer impact us. We go through the motions. But liturgies at one point were made to help us connect with God. And it's my conviction that if a liturgy doesn't help me connect with God, then it's of no use to me. But that doesn't mean we have to throw the liturgy away. It simply means that we need to help reimagine the liturgy, peel back the mundane layers that we've grown numb to, and look deeper into the liturgy's purpose. We don't have to throw away the form, we simply need to give the form new life. So for me, while the Nativity may have some historical inaccuracies and dubious conjectures, if I peel back the layers, I see people trying to remember who God really is. This is theology at its best, guys. It's not abstract concepts that we try to argue about. It's the nature of God. What kind of God is this? What kind of God would reveal himself to the world through an impoverished couple in the most humble of settings? What does it say about the nature of this God? This is not a God who sees power and prestige like our world does. This God sees power and prestige very differently. This God doesn't shape the world and demand our allegiance. This God quietly shows up and offers us an invitation. Come and see. Come and behold. What do you think? What do you feel? It's an invitation, and I can either decline it, or I can say yes. And that's why I still love the Nativity scene. When I sing Hark the Herald Angels Sing, or We Three Kings, or Little Town of Bethlehem, I remember why those songs were written. And when we lay out our family nativity scene on the dining room table, I pause. and I reflect on its meaning. And if my heart is open, then I have to admit the Nativity is a liturgy that works. It connects me to God. And today, I hope you can find that connection too. Blessings, guys. Love you.